You're listening to Comics with Normies, episode number 9, featuring the Aquaman special from 1988. Welcome back to Comics with Normies. I'm your host, Jared Albrecht, the Yard Sale Artist. And here on the show, we take a friend from my life who is not familiar with comics, doesn't really read them. We have them read a comic and kind of give us that outsider's opinion on what they think. Today's comic book is going to be Aquaman Special Number 1 from March of 1988. As I understand it, there had been a miniseries kind of trying to bring Aquaman back into popularity not too long before this. Aquaman is kind of, he's trying to find his way back into comics, and they're sort of kind of rebooting him, finding his way. This is post-crisis, and in the spring of 88, in March of 1988, they brought this special, Aquaman issue number 1, to kind of get back on the shelf. And this book was created by Gary Cohn and Dan Mishkin were the writers, and George Freeman and Mark Pacella were the artists on the book. But let's go ahead and meet our normie today. We actually have our first repeat guest. Welcome back to the show, Mr. Grant Potts. How are you doing today, Grant?
Thanks for having me, Jared.
I like the enthusiasm. All right, so it's been a while since Grant was on. I believe the last time he was here, he did an issue of either Superman or Action Comics. I can't remember which. It was like a 1970s or very early 80s issue is all I can remember. That shows you how tuned in I am to my own show. But we did have some fun with that, so that was cool.
Yes.
And so, Grant, just kind of remind the audience, tell us a little about yourself, whatever you want the people out in podcast land to know.
Well, I am a school teacher. I'm a world history teacher. I teach 8th grade in the Birmingham, Alabama area, and I suppose that's about it. I'm not a very noteworthy individual otherwise. I eat, I sleep, I consume air.
Yeah. Well, we've got this. That's a good hobby. Well, this show is about the hobbies of comic book collecting. What kind of hobbies do you have? What kind of interests do you have?
I'm kind of a wannabe musician. I play the saxophone. I'm trying to learn the guitar. It's pretty slow. I'm 46, so, you know, not easy to learn at that age. But I read a lot of history, but I also just read a lot of novels and such. And pretty big movie guy, I guess. That's probably it.
Okay, well, cool. Well, welcome back to the show. Okay, so last time you were here, we talked a little bit about what history you have with comics. If I remember correctly, you were kind of into the Flash TV show, and you were into some of the Marvel movies. It was the Arrow show. My bad. Yeah.
That's okay. And, not to be quick to correct, but.
What kind of stuff have you seen since then? Anything you've been into? Anything that caught your eye as far as comic books and other media since your last appearance on the show, which was, gosh, maybe a year ago?
Yeah, probably. The only thing I could think of was the Ant-Man movies. I think I may have seen the second one. Did I see him? No, I saw the first one first. But yeah, I enjoyed those. Those were a lot of fun. I especially liked the second one because there was this big climactic moment at Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco, and I've actually been there several times, so it was kind of cool to just to see something.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That I've been at in real life in a movie. So
when he was Giant Man there at the end, that was super cool.
But yeah, those were fun. I enjoyed them.
I'm glad you dig those. Well, with that, let's go ahead and get into our first podcast promo break. And when we come back from the break, we'll get into talking about the actual comic book Aquaman Special Number 1 from March of 1988. We'll be right back.
In fact, I think we should record a promo about all the changes to the Fire and Water Podcast Network happening this year. What do you think, Rob?
That's a great idea. We can mention the new folks joining the network and all the shows. I can talk about how we'll continue with our Aquaman and Firestorm show, and I want to be sure to plug my movie show, the Film and Water Podcast. What about you, Ryan?
Oh, I think we should definitely record a promo. I'll mention how the Secret Origins podcast is joining the Fire and Water Network, and then I'll introduce my newly relaunched shows, Give Me Those Star Wars and Power of Fishnets, the Black Canary and Zatanna podcast. Sound good to you, Chris?
Absolutely. I'll mention the show I record with my lovely wife, Cindy, Supermates, the Husband and Wife Geekcast. We should probably also mention the Power Records podcast Rob and I do, too. What about you, Siskoid?
Well, sure. I can talk about my ensemble show, The Lonely Hearts Romance Comics Podcast, and my new upcoming shows about the DC Comics crossover event, Invasion, and yes, Oh Hot Moo. Shag, you think we should mention Hero Points, the most occasional DC Heroes role-playing podcast?
Sure, why not? And I can talk about Who's Who, the definitive podcast of the DC Universe, and mention my new upcoming show, Justice League International, Wahaha Podcast. Now, here's what I'm thinking. When we record, I'm fine being the first person talking. I can explain all the changes to the
Wait a minute. Why do you get to start the promo? I'm just as much of a part of this as you are. It was my idea to create the Fire and Water podcast back in 2011. I should start off this promo.
I kind of think it should be one of the new voices who kick off the promo. It'll shock the listener into attention if it's not Rob or Shag.
Cindy and I make up two people in the network. Plus, you know, ladies first, so we should be the first people talking on the promo.
Ben voyons donc.
You have
what?
Got
the French cannot be the language of the Firewater.
Enough! Stop it. You're like boys with toys. Let's just make this simple. We can tell the folks at home the Fire and Water Podcast Network is growing in 2016. Several new shows are joining the network. We'll have a new dedicated website, a Twitter account, and Facebook page, and folks will be able to subscribe to each individual show or all of them. See, now was that so hard?
The Fire and Water Podcast Network, available soon through iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and fireandwaterpodcast.com.
Seriously, Shag, you had to get the last word, didn't you?
Okay, welcome back. And once again, I'm here with my buddy Grant Potts, our return guest to Comics with Normies. He hasn't been here for about a year, but now we're talking Aquaman Special number one from March of 1988. Grant, what were you doing in March of 1988?
I was 15. I was finishing up my freshman year of high school, and I got my very, very first official real job at a place called Country Burger in my hometown. It was kind of like Whataburger as far as the food was concerned and stuff, but I worked there a year and a half, flipping burgers and all the other things that go into that. I even rode my bike to that job. I didn't have a car. I couldn't drive yet. I rode my bike.
Did you eventually quit that job? Did you get laid off? Or are they still looking for you? Like, you just didn't come to work.
Well, you know, after they caught me spitting in the burgers, and my arch nemesis came in. Now, actually, my next job was in a movie theater, which is funny, as I said, I was a movie buff, so maybe that has something to do with it.
But now, yes, we have that in common. You and I both worked at movie theaters back in the day.
That's true.
Well, let's get into Aquaman Special number one from March of 1988, and this is going to be probably the most challenging part of the show because I asked the guests to give a recap of what happened in the issue, and I'm going to tell you, folks, this is kind of an odd one. I found this to be a very interesting choice for trying to get new readers into Aquaman, which was the whole point of these 88 specials, as I understand. Like I said, I had the Batgirl one, and I thought that was amazing. This one, a little more confusing. So, yeah. Grant, with your best guess, kind of give us a quick recap of what happened in Aquaman Special number one from March of 1988.
Let me tell you why I picked Aquaman before I summarize the plot. In my experience, which is very limited in the comic book world, but I pick up a lot of stuff from friends and from Big Bang Theory and stuff, I know Aquaman is kind of the redheaded stepchild of the superhero universe. Would you agree with that?
Yes, he's kind of...
He gets ripped a lot.
He's commonly the butt of a lot of jokes.
Yeah. So I just decided, okay, I want to see what's up with that. So I chose this one. It's funny because in the early part of the comic book, I thought, okay, now I know exactly what he gets ripped on. But but as the story unfolded, it made far more sense. Anyway, Aquaman, golly, and I read this like an hour ago. So he starts off by rescuing some folks from a hurricane. He meets up with his wife, which I didn't know he had a wife, which was interesting for me.
Mira,
yeah. The next thing I know, he's referring to how he's a changed man and all this, and then he meets up with some king of the ocean and he tries to compel him to let him now be the king. And we learned that he had stepped down from being king as he had some emotional problems or whatever. Basically, I felt like Aquaman needed to go to a therapist for bipolar disorder, I thought, for a while. And then right about the time he's arguing with the king about why he should come back, they discover there's this very odd thing in the bottom of the ocean that seems to be taking some people's lives from the city of Atlantis. They go check it out. It's this pink blob that looks like chewed bubblegum or something at the bottom of the ocean. And upon further investigation, it's this guy who was a previous Russian scientist who turned into this weird thing. And then it started this bizarre universe under the ocean. And the next thing we know, a small little pause here. I had to actually ask the yard sale artist here if this was a normal comic book. And I was very happy to learn that he assured me this one's very strange. But anyway, that's
it's a sliding scale.
More for discussion world. Later, I guess. But anyhow,
yeah, this is an odd one.
So anyhow, in talking to this scientist slash pink goo thing under the ocean now, he enlightens him that his emotions are very unstable because when he killed his brother, he lost part of his own psyche, so to speak. And this other half of his psyche is crossing the universe trying to reach him. And this little weird bubble world guy thing is the signal that's bringing this guy to him, basically. But in short order, this bubble guy scientist becomes the enemy of Aquaman. And then this is the part I didn't quite fathom is
you're okay with it up to now.
I mean, up to this point, to this point, it was a little strange, but I could follow it. And then suddenly it's like, okay, suddenly in order to defeat me, you have to go through these four challenges involving ancient Greek. One was the Capricorn and another was...
Yeah, it was all based around like the Zodiac.
Yeah, stuff. That's what I was trying to think of. Yeah, Zodiac. Anyway, and I just...
And they only use four of the Zodiacs.
Yeah, and so he defeats those four. And at the end, long story short, he defeats the strange scientist slash bubble thing at the bottom of the ocean. I can't quite remember exactly. Oh, there were these two objects that were like the source of his power. And he like separated them in that or something, if I don't.
Close enough. Yeah.
Anyway, and then he wins at the end. And apparently, I think the last few pages I didn't read super carefully, but I think his emotions stabilized or whatever.
Yeah, that emotional part of him got back to him and he became a whole.
Yeah, he wasn't swinging from one to the other extreme so much. But you know, it's funny, before I learned there was like a reason that he was so erratic, I thought he was like this total whiner. I was like, golly, man, Aquaman's just a little whining, crying baby. I was like, no wonder he gets slammed all the time.
Yeah,
like, and then that story unfolded. I was like, okay, that's actually part of the plot. I get it.
I distinctly remember when I read it, like, he seemed so whiny when he wanted to be king again. He was like, I want to be king again.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. It's like a little boy who wants a second cookie. He's not allowed to have one. No, that's funny. I thought the same thing at that scene.
But it was funny.
The scene ended very abruptly, though. Yeah.
I want to be king. No. I want to be king. No. You know, it was pretty funny. But I do understand his frustration because, you know, anybody who's gone through trying to make themselves a better person and you're like, I'm not going to do these behaviors anymore and I'm going to be better, which is what he was saying. And no one believes you yet. That's the most frustrating thing. They're like, no, I'm really trying to change and nobody believed him.
Well, like, whatever. You know, it's funny you say that because the thing I thought was, you know, I've talked to my students here in the GAN about first impressions that you leave with people and stuff. And I said, when you have a bad first impression in someone's mind, you can behave the opposite of whatever you did for years. And it's very hard to undo that first impression.
Mm-hmm. Great job on that story recap. I think you did as good as you can. That was a zany story, man. That was out there. I think they could have done maybe a little better on trying to get new readers into Aquaman or old readers back on Aquaman. Because that was just, it was wackadoodle, you know? And comics is a wackadoodle world, but sometimes it's, I don't know, man. But hey, we're not here to talk about my opinions. We're here to talk about your opinions.
Well, it's funny because the last Superman I did, we both decided, and that was my first like comic book I'd ever read all the way through it. And you were like, yeah, this one's weird too. Maybe I'm just a magnet for the oddballs.
All comics have some weirdness to them, but man, you've gotten a couple of ones sliding more to the weirder scale. And I don't force this on him, man. I gave him some to pick from. Like you said, he chose Aquaman because he kind of wanted to see, is this guy really the butt of a joke or not?
Is he so lame as his reputation precedes him?
Let me interrupt the conversation for just 1 second here, folks, as we need to thank our fine Patreon sponsors. We here at White Rocket Entertainment truly appreciate the following fine folks. Brendan O'Dwyer, Samuel Salvatore, Christopher Burleson, Christopher Brock, Carl Von Drunker, Phil Amthor, Susan Trawick, Ben Spooner, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Justin Bean, Steve Trawick, Richard Stevens, Johnny Caldwell, Riddles Wolf, Joshua Corbett, Elliot Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Anne Kanjian, Catherine England, George Gaston, Will Summerford, John McCune, Tom Anderson, Wes Adkins, Rich Reimer, Gerard Albrecht, William Glenn Matthews, Joel Beckham, Theodore Gray, Shannon Butson, Taylor, David Hegler, Mickey B, Hugh Anderson, Shane Bailey, Mick Vigicana, Chris Thrash, Logan Chilton, Tony Perry, Alex Quinn, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, C.T. Wayne, Dave Powell, Ivor Evans, John Zavachin, Chris Camo, Darren Pyle, Chris, Wardam Wade, Jason Albrecht, Randall Walker, Ben Amos, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Rob Morgan, Steve Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Rains, Nicholas Craig, Russell Milling, Matthew Wagstaff, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, Dave Medinas, Spanky, Brant Rumble, J.W. Rice, Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane, and our one-time and anonymous donors, including the awesome Surfer Chickify. If you'd like to help the White Rock Entertainment ship stay afloat, all you gotta do is head over to www.plexico.net. All the information you need is there, or you can go directly to Patreon and just search the keyword Plexico, P-L-E-X-I-C-O, and we would greatly appreciate your patronage over there. If you become a patron, you get access to a lot of early listenings. You get discounts on books and media that we're doing at White Rocket. We've got books, we've got comics, we've got all kinds of stuff. So if you want to be part of it, www.plexico.net. Now back to the show.
Okay, so story-wise, were there anything in the story that you particularly liked? I mean, we already know what you maybe didn't like. It was very confusing and all that, but were there any moments that kind of made you laugh, or you were like, oh, that was kind of a neat moment?
Just learning he had a wife, I had no clue. Mm-hmm. You know, my whole life I always pictured Aquaman as a solitary bachelor, I guess, and just, oh, look at that.
Did you know he was the king of Atlantis?
No, I didn't know about any of that stuff. So okay. That was an education, too.
Oh, I know what you're looking for. I see him flipping. I know what he's looking for. There's a pretty amusing part at the beginning when these
things. Yes, at the beginning when he's saving these guys on the boat in the hurricane, and they're in the ocean, and there's this one kid who realizes that he sees a shark, but the shark is actually saving him, but, you know, no one's going to know that unless you're Aquaman, and Aquaman's all, look at that guy get all freaked out that he thinks he's about to get eaten by a shark. That was hilarious. And his face is even, you know, like, yeah. It's like Aquaman's got a bad little dark sense of humor here, laughing at someone else's exceptional misfortune.
But this poor guy caught in the middle of a hurricane, he's swept off his boat, he thinks he's going to drown, and Aquaman's like, I'm going to send him a shark because this is going to be a this poor guy, man.
You know,
but the shark did save the guy.
Yes, that's true. I don't know if there's anything else that jumped out at me plot-wise other than just, as we said before, the unique, bizarre nature of it.
Okay, then let's get into talking about the art of the book, and let's start where all art starts, which is on the cover. Covers are designed to grab your attention, make you want to pull this off of a spinner rack or a shelf. How well do you think the cover did that?
I am so not an artist, and I appreciate exceptionally how hard it is to create something like this, and I'm not just saying that because this is what you do when you're sitting here.
No, it's cool.
But this cover doesn't jump out at me too much. Mm-hmm. I guess just because there's not as much color.
Yeah, they mute a lot of
the
background.
It's not a bad drawing or anything. It just doesn't blow my hair back, and I kind of feel bad. I feel like the artist deserves more credit than that. But
for you listeners out there, if you aren't familiar with this issue or you just don't remember any memory jogger. It's basically Aquaman in his sort of old school orange and green, as we knew him from Super Friends outfit. He's kind of got his arms up like, you know, and you can see the, what they call, some people call the ice skater Aquaman costume version of him, which I think was from the miniseries, sort of as a phantasm kind of moving in behind him. And then you've got the pink blob guy going across the bottom. So I do give the cover, this is my opinion, I give the cover points for depicting what happens in the book. A lot of covers kind of
Okay. And I would agree with that. Definitely. You know, it's funny. This is probably going to be a guy. You're such a non-comic book doofus, Mark Grant. But doesn't this look a little like the Silver Surfer?
Yes.
A tiny bit.
He's referring to that sort of phantasm, kind of ghostly apparition of the version of Aquaman before that had that, like I said, it's kind of, we jokingly call it the ice skater costume. The very tight one with the two-tone color thing. But he does kind of look like, if he had no hair, he would totally look like the Silver Surfer.
Yeah.
I guess that's true. But yeah, if it doesn't grab you, it doesn't grab you.
It's not bad or anything. It's just, you know what? I probably don't have as much, you know, perspective to drop.
Well, you don't even need perspective to say whether or not, you know, if you were looking on a shelf, you're like, oh, this looks really interesting. And if it doesn't, then, you know, it doesn't. And I will admit, they do use a lot of muted colors. You pointed that out. The only thing that's sort of bold color, which was a smart move, is Aquaman himself. He stands out.
Is there a reason for the orange and green with him? Because I just think Aquaman blew the ocean. That's just how I always go to that. You know, it's kind of infantile in a way, I guess.
I really don't know the reasoning behind the character design, but it's funny you should say that, because this Silver Surfer-y looking guy, because he's more of a ghostly apparition. That version of Aquaman, if I remember correctly, the ice skater costume, I think was black and blue. I think that they kind of took a stab at that in the old miniseries, but anyway. So that's the cover. On the inside, interior art, and again, the art team here is George Freeman and Mark, I think it's Pacella is how you pronounce it. What did you think about the art? Was there anything that stood out to you that you're like, oh, that was really cool, or anything that was like, this is, I don't like it, or I don't know what's going on, or did, you know, just do its job, you know? What did you think about that interior art?
I thought it was really good. The first few pages, the colors were a little bit similar, so it was sort of hard for me to gain some spatial perspective a little bit, but that wasn't so bad or anything. Okay, now this is so cheesy.
It's actually a good point. A lot of people don't realize how valuable a colorist can be to a book to help it really pop.
And I figured the thing's 30 years old. Maybe some of it's just faded a little. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Okay, and you may even edit this out if you like, but I just could not help but notice that this man that Aquaman saves looks exceptionally like Steven Tyler.
He does. We are on content page 5, panel 3. Aquaman saves Steven Tyler.
Steven Tyler was on a merchant ship for a little while, you know, taking a break from the rock and roll world. But anyway, I saw that and I thought, that is too funny. No, but otherwise, I thought the artwork was really good. As a non-comic book guy, I've always maintained, or at least since the movie Unbreakable came out and Samuel Jackson had a little rant about this, I've always maintained that the art of comic books is genuinely art, because it takes a great deal of skill, and I've always been impressed by what I've seen. Just especially faces that close close-ups.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the wrinkles and just the little.
They do a lot of face details. Close-ups in this book.
Yeah, there are a lot. Other than that, I just thought it was pretty solid all the way around, really. There's a lot of pink in this one when you get to that thing under the ocean. That's what it's very large, and that's its color.
When he fights chewing gum man, that's what we'll call him.
Yeah, you know what? I keep wanting to think cotton candy, but this texture doesn't look like that. The artwork on the Capricorn was kind of creepy because he looks so much like a very real-looking devil, although almost a trick-or-treat devil, you know, with the hooves and the horns and all, but still very convincing. And the little Taj Mahal building under the water.
Architecture can be challenging to draw. That building sure certainly did look good.
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, not being an art person, I can appreciate anything that I look at and I go, that would be exceptionally hard for me to do. And so just about every picture.
All right.
I know that's pretty surface-level stuff there, but
no, that's
beyond the Steven Tyler, exceptionally impressive discovery there.
All right. We've hit the story and we have hit the art. Let's talk about the additional things that maybe found in the book, and that would be the ads. As you flip through this, you know, being a lad of what would you say, 15?
15, yeah.
In 1988, did any of these ads strike a chord with you? Remind you anything? Anything that kind of stood
strike
out?
A chord? I wonder if that is an appropriate or intentional term there, Mr.
Not
Albert.
Not an intentional segue, but now I see where we're going with it.
We'll get to that in a second here, so I'm going to go through in order. Okay, there was an M&M's ad and they had the little M&M's people, which I didn't remember going all the way back to 1988. That was intriguing. But yes, okay. There's a page you can order a bunch of music, and I just got a big kick out of looking at all the bands on here because it's definitely before the Nirvana GarageBand era because there's all these big metal bands on here and several of them I really liked.
Oh, we got to have examples. What are some of these 80s bands?
The ones that stand out to you that I really liked. I was a big Billy Idol fan. Boston. Def Leppard. Let's see here.
What are they selling here? Like tapes or records or...
Well, actually, this list I'm looking at here is T-shirts. There's T-shirts and buttons and patches and...
Oh, okay.
Okay, that's actually, I think that's what all of it is. None of it's music, actually. And there's keychains, wallets, yeah.
Well, this was back in the day when it was definitely cool to rock, you know, your favorite band's patch on your jean jacket and all that.
That's true. Zeppelin, although that's 70s, but that's on here. Metallica, Motley Crue, Poison. Some of these bands are bands I wasn't necessarily a fan of, but I just remember they embodied that time period, and I heard them all the time.
Oh, definitely.
White Snake.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
But I liked White Snake. U2, I was off, and that was cool. But
that's weird that you
bands
point out,
from my youth.
You pointed out U2, that you can get U2 merchandise because I've been looking for it for a while and I still haven't found what I'm looking for. Eh?
I see what you did there. That actually wasn't bad. Just for a second, I thought you were being serious. You know why you haven't found it? Because you're on a street that has no name.
Oh. Well, they don't put names on the streets, man. It's hard to find the stuff.
Let's see.
This
here.
Has been Jared and Grant's U2 Puns Podcast.
Okay, there was some more. Let me see. I know there was something else I saw.
Oh, another ad.
Oh, yeah. The what I would call the Sea Monkeys page, the stuff where the mail order stuff.
Oh, yeah, where they cram a bunch of ads into one little page. Yeah. Sometimes we call it the flea market ads.
That's right. You told me that last time. I forgot. Okay. When I was a kid, I was always intrigued by the Muscle Man thing. I never ordered or anything. I just always used to look at it and be like, wow, only 7 days I could look like that guy.
Was that in your One Beetle Bailey comic you had
as
a kid?
No kidding. I genuinely.
Harkening back to Grant's first appearance, he revealed to us the only comic he had as a child was that he had like a single issue of Beetle Bailey.
And I think I still have that buried in my closet.
You really still have it? Oh, my God. We might need to do a special episode where Grant revisits Beetle Bay.
For a long time, I had it in a scrapbook. And then that scrapbook, I know I wouldn't have gotten rid of the scrapbook, but I just can't remember where I put it. It's either that or it's in my parents' house buried in the attic or in the closet or something. Anyway, so there's a Muscle Man. There's a thing for stamps. 50 Warriors for $5. Glider ad. As a history teacher, I'm always very intrigued by advertisements because it's a nice little window into the pop culture.
Absolutely.
In fact, one of my favorite things in college is I wrote a paper on the Nuremberg trial, and all my sources were Time and Newsweek magazine. And when I wanted to take a break from the actual research I was doing, I would just go look at the ads.
Look at the ads. It's cool. That's really me.
Yeah, you can get this hair tonic, you know, the word that they don't use anymore.
Speaking of old-timey ads, giving you a window into the past, in 1988, do you remember what the tabletops at the Wendy's used to do that? All Wendy's
that.
Restaurants used to have old-timey ads as their
tabletop. I have a vague memory of that.
I missed that, man. That was so neat.
Yeah, you're right. Right. And okay, now tell me if this is a little
different. We're off comic. We don't care. We're talking about stuff.
Did the Wendy's you went to as a kid ever have colored beads hanging in the window?
Yes.
Yes. Because I lived in Arizona during that time period, 78 to 84. So you and I, if you were in Alabama, you could have been anywhere being an army brat. But
in 88, to be honest with you, I was living in Germany, but I remember going to Wendy's before we moved to Germany in 87. Yeah. And welcome to Wendy's Podcast, episode one. Anyways.
I don't think, let me see if there's any other ad. There. Wait, there was one. Oh, there was the Flash Gordon ad, and I always just laugh when I see a Flash Gordon because I think, Flash, the Queen song.
Queen song.
And I know nothing. And I think of all the little cheesy liners that, you know, we only have 9 hours to save the earth in that song or whatever. Never saw the movie.
Can't believe you never saw Flash Gordon, but we'll do a whole, we'll do a series of podcasts with Grant. We'll catch up on his Beetle Bailey. We'll make him watch Flash Gordon, the movie, and we'll talk Wendy's restaurant formats. Before we do all of that, we're going to go ahead and take our next podcast promo break, and we will be back with Grant's verdict on how likely he would be to pursue more Aquaman comics based off of this one. My hopes are not high. We'll be right back.
Warlord Worlds,
a fan podcast devoted to the comics of writer and artist Mike Grell, including The Warlord, John Sable, Green Arrow, Starslayer, and Shaman's Tears.
I'm Ruth.
And I'm Darren.
Please join us as we discuss the stories, characters, and art in the many excellent comics from writer and artist Mike Grell.
Special episodes feature interviews with Mike Grell himself.
And special segments feature great guests discussing the Legion of Superheroes.
Listen at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and YouTube.
Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or visit warlordworlds.com.
Warlord Worlds is part of the Rad Adventures Network at radadventuresnetwork.com.
And we are back with Grant Potts. He is our normie return guest. It's been about a year since he's been on the show. And we looked at Aquaman Special number 1 from 1988 by Michigan Cone, Freeman, and Pacella.
And I'd like to say to the fans, I'm sorry it took me a year to finally get back.
I know you've been clamoring for some more Grant Potts. So, but he's back. Okay, so, you know, we talked about cover, we talked about art, we talked about story, we talked about the ads. Given this issue of Aquaman Special, number 1, on a 1 to 10 scale, how likely would you be to read another issue of Aquaman if presented with one?
Oh, I'd have to go with probably a -4. No, I'm kidding. You know what? As much as this one was weird, I might be willing to give it another try just to get a better feel for the standard, what is the real Aquaman world like. So I might give it about a 4. Not to be silly from my previous dumb joke, but probably about a 4.
About a 4.
Not real strong, like, but not like, you know, not a 1.
Like so, maybe. Like, yeah. That's cool. No, I get your point of view on that. This was a very sort of mystical and a little bit wackadoodle, not a straightforward adventure that you might expect. Well, that will bring us to the end of the show. Do you have any final thoughts or parting wisdom for the audience, Grant Potts?
Never play with matches at a gas station.
There you go. Never play with matches at a gas station. That is valuable advice from our guest today, Grant Potts. Again, I'm Jared Albrick, the Yard Sale Artist, and you can send your questions or comments on Twitter to @NormiesPodcast, or you can send them to me personally at Yard Sale Artist. I'm also on Facebook and Instagram at Yard Sale Artist, so if you want to comment about this or any of other previous episodes, just, you know, at Yard Sale Artist, or once again, we have at Normies Podcast on Twitter. This show is part of the White Rocket Entertainment Network, so you can always check that out at www.whiterocket.podbean.com.
May I make a shameless plug for a friend?
Absolutely. Make a plug for a friend.
Friend of mine, Scott McClellan, big comic book guy. I don't know if he still does this podcast, but a year ago he was doing one on the Suicide Squad. So if you want to go on iTunes and check it out, I'm sure we'd really appreciate it.
Do you know the name of his show?
It's called the Suicide Squad Cast. As I understand it, just kind of analyzes the whole DC Comics world. So if you like that, I think you'd like it. Check it out. Suicide Squad Cast.
Suicide Squad Cast. All right, cool. Well, thanks again for being here at Grant Potts and going through another weird comment.
Maybe Beetle Bailey will bring us down to earth.
Do a little Beetle Bailey action. Everything will be fine. Thanks again for being here. And all you listeners out there, you keep reading comics and I'll keep finding somebody who doesn't. Check you later.
Thanks again for listening to Comics with Normies. All the music provided for Comics with Normies is done by musical genius Joe November. Check him out on SoundCloud at JOSEFLIN99. You will not regret it. And shout out to my good friend Pat Sampson, aka DJ Christados. He does a lot of the editing on the show, and he hosts an awesome podcast called The Long Box Crusade. And I'm not just saying that because I'm on it, but you should check that out too. Thanks again.